Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Mahfouz Ahmed, who is the CEO of Dysys. And Dysys has an interesting story, and we're going to talk about that today. It's a global technology and business consulting firm that serves the needs of Fortune 1000 companies all across the world, doesn't it?
That's correct.
And from incorporation in 1994, the company has grown dramatically. In fact, it was at a low point, I guess, of $4,000 of revenue in 2001. It's now over $150 million in revenue in 2010. Congratulations on that stellar growth.
Thank you.
And with 16 global offices and delivery locations spanning all across the world, Dysys has earned a reputation for offering round-the-clock deployment, outstanding client service, and state-of-the-art solutions. You've got companies that are probably on the who's who's list of anyone that you would want as a client, I assume.
That is correct, too.
So tell me about your background in the IT and consulting worlds. Where did you come from before starting Dysys?
Well, I got my bachelor's in electrical engineering from George Mason University, and I had a minor in computer science. Right after I graduated, and this was when there was a little bit of a recession going on, 1993, 1994, I started with Mobil Oil Corporation as a consultant, IT consultant, building their quality assurance practice. Mm. And from there, we had the idea that maybe we should incorporate. And it's just like most college students coming up with a brilliant idea that they think they have. Started the company and started growing from there.
So you're an entrepreneur by spirit and at heart all the way.
That would be true.
So what pushed you to form Dysys, and what competitive advantages have you built in the marketplaces that you're serving?
So when we started Dysys, it was predominantly because we went into consulting, working for other companies. And we saw that there was definitely a big market where the service could be delivered better. The people who were delivering the service, i.e. the consultants,
right.
They generally did not feel that they were well taken care of. So
okay.
That's how it really started. But as we grew, it evolved into providing a service in between the consulting companies and the staffing companies. So the consulting companies would come in and do a major implementation of their major applications like ERP systems.
Okay.
And then the staffing companies would just provide them bodies later on. But in between, you need services for maintenance and upgrade where you need to assemble teams of individuals who could do this work. So we thought that we probably could get into the market and specialize.
What is ERP systems? You just mentioned that acronym, and I know I have listeners out there that some of them understand it and some of them don't. What does that mean?
ERP is Enterprise Resource Planning. These are major software that big companies implement like SAP and Oracle that manage their entire supply chain.
So you bring teams of individuals who have expertise in maintaining and upgrading these programs to help these big companies continue to keep their systems in play and up to date.
That is correct. So what we do is build a dynamic team based on our clients' need.
Interesting. How many employees does Dysys have?
Currently, worldwide, we have about 2,800 employees.
Fantastic. And you've experienced amazing growth year over year. Your team has been able to consistently achieve and really exceed your revenue goals on a year-wide basis. You've got 16 offices worldwide. What are your secrets to success in building these results-oriented teams? How do you do this?
Well, what we do is we come up with a grand plan for the year and obviously a five-year plan, but then we break it down to individual level things that they can impact and control. So we don't give people goals that are irrelevant to them. We tell them about the grand plan, but their goal is to do their portion of what needs to get done.
Fantastic. So it's really, you're really focusing on the consultant as well as the client, but you're focusing on the consultant to make sure that the consultant has the best chance of succeeding.
That's absolutely true.
Which is a different approach from most people. They just assemble bodies and they send them out and do the work, right?
Right. And you know, most companies will tell you that people are their biggest asset, but they don't do anything to really take care of them. So our goal is to really practice what we preach.
So you're building and sustaining functional and winning teams. How do you lead the way in fostering an open and productive workplace at DICIS so that your employees can make a difference in the local community and around the world?
So one of the things that we have done this year is that we have come up with a program, and this is a program that actually the employees voted on and selected, where each branch, each one of the 16 branches that we have a monthly allowance of between $500 to $1,000 for a community service initiative. Somebody from the branch would have to sponsor an initiative, and then everybody in the branch would have to vote on it if there are multiple initiatives that are put forward.
Okay.
And then the one that gets the most amount of votes gets the contribution from the company side. And these are all local charities, so we want our employees to be engaged locally.
Can you give me an example of some of the great charitable things that your branches have been able to accomplish in recent times?
Well, we just started the program, so I probably will have more information.
More war
later
stories
on.
To come. More
yes.
War stories to come. When you were growing up at Mobil, and then you went out on your own after, you know, when you started DICIS, did you have any mentors, or do you have any mentors today that have helped you realize your potential as a leader of a fast-growing business?
Well, I had mentors all throughout my growing up years and my career. The one person in Mobil Oil Corporation that really helped me out was a gentleman by the name of Edward Jones, and he was my immediate supervisor. He was a 25-year-old guy, very sharp, fast-rising. And what he taught me is that you don't have to just do things that are in front of you and that are your responsibility. You should try to make an impact in everything you can make an impact on, and not do it just for the rewards that you're going to get, but to foster better business behavior.
Wow. What a great lesson and a great mentor.
Yes.
Do you still communicate with him today?
Yes, he's working for EMC and in Boston, so I do keep in touch.
And can you give me, you know, some more examples of how he has influenced your career and you've adopted some of these strategies in leading the people that you lead today?
So again, he was a manager who really got the employees involved. So when there was a decision to be made, he would listen to all his team members, not just give a directive.
Ah.
So that's how we manage at DICIS as well, that if there are any policies, we make sure that everybody who's going to be impacted by it has an input into it. So it's not just a top-down approach, it's actually a bottom-up approach.
Now, you are growing a company at a really rapid rate, and year over year, I imagine that the company is still growing in this environment, even in a down economic climate. What is it that you attribute your success to? How do you achieve year after year growth? What is we've talked about the secret of focusing on consultants, and what is your business plan over the next 5 years? Where do you hope to see DICIS grow to?
Well, our plan is to grow 30% year over year for the next 6 years.
And listeners, I don't know if you saw my face. You didn't, but it was like my jaw just dropped, because that's 30% year over year is incredible growth.
Well, we have been able to achieve that even in the down years of 2008 and 2009.
Sure.
And last year, we actually grew close to 50%. Our booking for 2011 is about a 60% growth.
Good
so,
gracious.
So I think we can do it. And the reason is we are taking execution as a strategy, although it makes probably little sense to business school teachers, but to deliver what you promise really does make a difference. We have case studies after case studies with our major clients where we have been able to deliver our projects on time and under budget.
Are there any case studies that you can share with the listeners of the tremendous success that you've achieved without revealing any really confidential stuff?
Sure. So we were working with a major oil and gas company, and we were one of the three partners that they chose for a global SAP upgrade. And two of the other partners were very large multinational companies.
Right.
And when we won the contract, the procurement agent had told us that, look, it's great that you guys won it. It's a major accomplishment for you guys. And we're hoping that you guys will get maybe a 10% of the share, and that would be excellent. Fast forward 2 years, we won 60% of the business that came through.
Great.
And it's because the managers saw that the teams that we assembled were generally more experienced and for less cost. So if you, again, if you look at last couple of years, it's been really focused on cost containment and delivery.
Right.
So we have been able to deliver even for that major oil and gas customer who is a very conservative customer normally.
Yes.
And as a result of that, they have put us in a part of a group called their Key Supplier Management Program. So now they share with us some of their future initiatives, things that they're planning to do 4 years down the line so that we can prepare ourselves. So it really does bode well when you can get with your client as a partner.
So one of the lessons that you've learned, I guess, in the economic downturn, which puts you ahead of your competition, was keep costs contained just as everybody else is trying to keep costs contained. So don't try to charge premium rates, particularly when companies are trying to cut costs.
That is correct.
And then the second one that I heard you say is that experience matters. So bringing in people with experience is important. How do you attract experienced people to provide services at reduced rates?
So we have in the industry what's called a 5% bench model. That means that if your project ends, only 5% of the people we retain, the 95% of the people, if I don't have a follow-on project, they will be let go after a couple of weeks on the bench. Now, the reason that we attract the premium talent is because the projects that we win are interesting projects. They're large scale. They're new things that people want to do.
Right.
And we pay them a very high premium for it. So our profit margin requirement is less than some of the big boys.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense to me. So it's a new business model competing with the big boys or big girls out there, and that you're achieving success with. Tremendous success.
Thank you.
Yes. What's your exit strategy?
Exit strategy probably is IPO in 6 years if you can hit a billion-dollar mark. Again, we have talked about it at our management meetings. Everybody is just really excited about things that they're doing. So, you know, nobody even wanted to talk about exit, but, you know, it's there in the horizon at some point.
Hey, do you have any advice for entrepreneurs that are starting out today?
Sure. I would say two things. One is that I think people underestimate how long and what kind of commitment it takes to be successful. People want instant gratification. It takes a few years, and you have to be patient.
Especially when you were starting out, the internet was just getting going, and everybody wanted to be an instant millionaire. And some people were made that, I think, out of luck particularly. But you're right. So you've got to be a little more patient, right?
That's correct. That's number one. And number two, I would say, is hiring good people and delegating. People who are type A and want to get everything done, it's hard for them to delegate. It was hard for me to delegate as well, but I realized that when I delegated, some people did the job much better than when I could do it myself.
What a great realization. We're talking with Mahfouz Ahmed, who is the CEO of Dysys. And Mahfouz, the question I have for you, because I'm really looking at a very successful business here, is what would be your greatest accomplishment to date, and what do you hope to accomplish in the next 5 years other than just year-on-year growth?
So our greatest accomplishment, we think, was being able to sustain ourselves, grow ourselves during the down years of 2008, 2009, and 2010. It's great to have a business model and you thinking that it works. When the times are good, everybody can grow and make money.
Right.
When the times are bad, that's when your business model really gets tested. Ours got tested and it came out in flying colors.
Yes, it did.
So we are very proud of the group of individuals we have and how we have fared through these years.
Excellent, excellent. And the next 5 years, your goal?
Again, to grow to a billion-dollar company and a global company. That's what our goal is, to be global.
Will you do that by acquisition or organically?
Up to now, we have done everything organically. At some point, we probably have to look at acquiring some other companies, but I don't think the time is right yet.
If the listeners want to get in touch with you, Mahfouz, how do they do that?
to our website, www.disys.com.
Which is D-I-S-Y-S?
That's correct.
Excellent. I thank you for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth today. And for all you listeners out there, please tune in to Blueprint for Wealth on a weekly basis, but also check out my column in the Washington Business Journal, which appears usually the first Friday of every month. I hope you are enjoying the show, and stay tuned for more shows, more special guests, more special topics. I'm Wayne Zell. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week.